It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, love my lies. Feline, with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Got a big weekend. Lance is going to come together. He has an issue with Mates not being here. By the way, AJ's here again because Sean Mates is doing the afternoon show. But he got a big weekend. It actually starts tonight. Got the Cougs in Corvallis against the Beavers. But it's a weekend where our two pro teams are in desperation mode. Carlos Correa was asked after their Wednesday loss to the A's what they had to do to get into the playoffs. And he said, well, we got to win out. Off to a good start. They beat the A's yesterday afternoon. Fromber did his thing. Cut the hair, or at least took out the extensions, which is probably the more likely scenario. I don't think there was any real hair of his to cut. I mean, he cleaned it up around, you know, get yourself a little shape up. But he took the extensions out. And he was back to form. Don't know if it'll be his last start as an Astro, whether they make the playoffs or not. But he went out on a high note. The bats got going. It was a non-competitive game. Pretty early, you can kind of get to relax for once. It turned into watching what happened later in the day, where the Blue Jays beat the Red Sox, but the Tigers did beat the Guardians. So as it stands right now, I don't want to get bogged down into numbers so much as far as scenarios, but the Astros don't control their own destiny. The Tigers go to Boston, so keep an eye out there. Of course, you got to take care of your own business as you stand two games behind the Red Sox and one game behind the Tigers. So whatever permutations are needed in that series, You likely need to win out to give yourself the best shot. And you go with what we like to call as our hero, Jason Alexander, who wasn't great in his last start, but he goes today against Hendricks in Anaheim. So we need him to be like James Vanderbeek on that last drive in Varsity Blues, where they were struggling, but he found a way to come through. We need Jason Alexander to show up and get it done. And then we hope things go the way they need to go. Like tonight, of course you would like the Tigers to lose, but if the Red Sox lose, fine. You just need them to keep losing the rest of the series while you keep winning. So don't control your destiny, but you got to win ball games. You got off to a good start as you took apart the A's. It was nice to end the losing streak to the A's. It was five in a row. Yeah, lost five straight times to the A's. Finally, that's, by the way, side. Shout out to Paredes, who Sean and I talked about earlier in the week, is pretty much playing on a leg and a half, and Joe Espada told him not to exert himself on the base path. So you can see him take that to heart. There was one at bat where he hits a ball down the left field line, probably had an opportunity to stretch it to two, but he decided to take his single, and he drove in a run, and Altuve took third in that situation. So he is trying to power through, and he's productive yesterday, just like the rest of the lineup. They win that game and keep themselves alive, so we'll take it. It is a situation they put themselves in by really their poor play in the division. They have been less than stellar against the division in the back half of the season. And hopefully the Angels are a soft touch. The Angels have been dependable. And, hey, we could beat this team, right? We're going to need that over the next 3 days. And it's not insurmountable, the deficit, as far as what needs to happen, all the scenarios, but it's tougher than you would like. It would have really helped if the Guardians had swept the Tigers, but the Tigers avoided that scenario. And the Guardians are not free and clear either. They hold the tiebreaker over the Tigers as it stands now, but they're a team to take a look at too, as far as maybe if they stop playing good baseball, which they have clearly done, and that's why they have come back from the large deficit that they were facing earlier in the season. So you got a couple of series to look at. It's Guardians as they close out their season against the Rangers. Can the Rangers do you a favor? It's probably too much to ask. And then, of course, as I said, Red Sox and Tigers. That'll be the two series we take a look at and see if the Astros can find some fortune and get back into the playoffs. And then we can have a discussion on Monday about do we believe that they have a real shot to do anything. But you got to get there first, and this weekend we'll decide it. We got Texans to certainly talk about. Their coordinators were at the podium yesterday, so we'll hear from them. There's some numbers regarding the Texans that would suggest if they are good at self-scouting that they should use faster, smaller people on the field as opposed to some of their tight formations and having bigger people on the field, including a fullback. They have not been good with Jacob Johnson on the field and those tight formations that they seem to love. One thing that stood out to me reading the article, we'll get to it when we come back, is Jacob Johnson has played only one less snap than Jalen Knoll. Now, it doesn't have to be Jalen Knoll, per se. It could be another wide receiver in that spot. Of course, Christian Kirk has been out, so you think the like-for-like replacement would be Jalen Knoll for those first two games, and he has had limited snaps while they have leaned into Jacob Johnson a little bit more than you would suspect. Sounds a lot like New England. New England loved to have a fullback at times, unlike the Rams, where Nick Caley was last year. The Rams don't deploy a fullback. His previous job in New England, they did deploy fullbacks, and we've seen that here. And while that you would think would be a positive in the run game, it hasn't led to much success in the run game. So we heard, and we'll hear when we come back, some discussions about going up tempo. Didn't hear that much about personnel, and I'll get into some of the numbers and why maybe a personnel change as far as usage should be in the cards. And maybe that doesn't happen to the bye, where they can actually dig deep into the numbers and see what they're good at and what they're bad at. A little hint, they're not good at anything offensively. They're just worse, much worse in with some personnel packages than they are with others. So they're aware they should probably play faster. We'll see if that leads to faster players actually on the field as opposed to maybe a tight end here or a fullback there. All right, we'll go to break with that. It's me and AJ till noon. It's a big college football weekend too. Well, I started with the mentioning the Cougs. We got big games on Saturday. Alabama against Georgia. We got Oregon versus Penn State in both those teams' first real tests. We'll find out quite a bit about Penn State. They haven't looked great. I mean, they're just dismantling teams that are worse than them, but we haven't seen Drew Aller really since he threw that pick against Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl. So we'll see with an actual team that they're going to game plan for as opposed to their first couple opponents, what he looks like in his last year with Penn State. And Dante Moore, of course, the former UCLA quarterback, is at Oregon, and he's gotten off to a good start. But he, along with Drew Aller, haven't faced much competition. So those two games, Alabama-Georgia, Penn State-Oregon, are at the top of the heap. But you also got UCLA going to Illinois. Illinois coming off a big-time beatdown at the hands of Indiana. USC going to Illinois, and USC is a team that we haven't seen a lot of because a lot of their games, of course, West Coast, so it's a little later in the day, and their opponents haven't been great. And then Ohio State goes to Washington. Washington undefeated, and that's a tough place to play. It's underrated how tough going to Seattle is. We got Auburn and A&M. You'll be able to hear that game here. LSU Ole Miss, as I point out. Big weekend this weekend for college football, so we'll touch on some of those games as we go forward. So Texans, college football, and we'll hear from Zach Lowe on what the Rockets are planning to do regarding their point guard situation. There was a list that came out of potential trade options. We talked about Zach Lowe himself and Bill Simmons speculating about maybe Austin Reeves would be someone the Rockets would be interested in if things went wrong in L.A. Well, Zach Lowe's done a little of a digging, and he has some insight on the Rockets' plan. So we'll get to that as we go forward. So we're just getting started. If you want to join us, 713-780-3776. Me and AJ till noon. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Something interesting that popped up from Robert Saleh regarding the Texans' most recent opponent, and the 49ers have to face the Jags this week. Apparently, the Jags are great at sign stealing. Now, he said they're doing it legally, but he says everyone from the McVay tree is great at it. And the Texans have played two McVay connected teams. Obviously, the Rams, who are coached by him. He's the head coach. And also the Jags. Liam Cohen is their head coach. He was an assistant under Sean McVay. So the Texans may have been at a distinct disadvantage before they even started playing, because apparently the McVay tree, great at sign stealing. The Texans have a McVay guy here. I don't get the sense that the Texans are stealing anyone's signs right now. Maybe Nick Cayley is the one where the tree stopped bearing fruit when it comes to sign stealing. So Robert Saleh, let that be known yesterday, that if you face a McVay or a McVay offshoot, get ready for them to know a lot of what you're doing. From hand signals, from players, to even just plays being sent in. So there that is. I didn't know that was a thing. And the Texans may have had to deal with that two out of the first 3 weeks of the season. But getting to Nick Cayley, of course, he's the coordinator under fire. Like Matt Burke makes his appearance on Thursdays as well, but what is there to say about Matt Burke? I mean, there was a topic of Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, so he answered questions about that. But for the most part, no one's really that interested in what Matt Burke has to say, because the defense is pretty good, and D'Amico is the head of that defense. But Nick Cayley's the guy who we want to have answers from, and he took a bit of offense at the assertion or the assumption that the Texans are maybe more like the Patriots than we'd like offensively. D'Amico has said this in the past. It's one of the reasons he hired Nick Cayley. He did not want to copy and paste offense. So that is something the Texans are aware of. Here's Nick Cayley on the thought that maybe they're more like the Patriots than they should be.
Well, again, this is our system. This is not a copy and paste New England Patriots system. Okay, if that's what you're alluding to, I'm asking. But relative to the system, I think everything we've done has been very intentional to be able to cater it around our players, to simplify the make the verbiage very. And we stripped everything down to the studs in the spring. So I think the thing that this system does is allow our guys to be able to have enough bandwidth and flexibility to alter schemes to fit the guys that we have from week to week. And that's what it does. Whether it's, again, in the run game, gap schemes, perimeter plays, zone, mid zone, wide zone, like we can activate those based on who we're facing and who we have available. And I think from a language standpoint, you know, we've cleaned that up and from the time we got here.
So while he doesn't want to hear it, people from the outside are looking at it and saying, "Yeah, you're kind of Patriots-like." He has the two influences, McVay and McDaniels. And if you look at what the Texans are doing down by down, they lean Patriots as far as offense. McVay is more certainly under center with motion, and you're going to have three wide receivers on the field. That's what his personnel, that's what he loves as far as personnel is concerned. The Patriots were more static recently, where they have a fullback on the field and some downhill runs. And when you look at what the Texans did this offseason, they went and traded for Christian Kirk. They went and got themselves two receivers, the two Ohio State receivers. And you thought to yourself, okay, maybe they're going, and certainly Nate Tice did of Yahoo, who wrote this piece about struggling offenses, he thought they would go more Rams. But after looking at it, and we've all seen it, we don't need anyone to tell us that the offense is bad. they are more stylistically leaning Patriots as opposed to Texans. Now, of course, you just heard Nick Caley. He would kind of scoff at that, but the evidence is the evidence. Not only are they bad at it, they're boring, and apparently they're duplicating what another team does. And as we remember, when Tom Brady or rookie year Mac Jones isn't available for the Patriots under McDaniel slash Belichick, they were not dynamic offensively. And that has been the case here with the Texans. So the stat that I mentioned on the previous show, and that's jumping out to me, one of those aforementioned receivers that they drafted, Jalen Knoll, has just one more snap on the field than Jacob Johnson, their fullback. And it's not like Jacob Johnson and that power offense personnel is leading the Texans to good things. So when they're in tight formations, when you see Nico almost attached to the tight end, or now it's Christian Kirk, or maybe it was Justin Watson or Higgins, when those guys are close to the formation, the Texans, as far as early downs, well, downs overall, really poor. Their success rate when they run with big people out there in tight formations, one of the worst in the league. Like, they are 31st in the league with that personnel grouping. They're a little better when they have more receivers on the field. In other words, when they got fast people on the field and they're not in those tight formations, they get into like the 20th range. So, as I said, it's not great either way, but it's much better when smaller, faster guys are on the field. And that might lead to some people's thoughts when it comes to how C.J. Stroud operates best, because there were a lot of smaller, faster players when he was dealing at Ohio State. Now we're referencing something that's three seasons ago now. Actually, well, three-plus seasons ago now. But he does appear to be more comfortable when he can just catch it from the shotgun, find an open receiver, and just deal. As far as getting away from center and having those condensed formations, the Texans have been plodding and ineffective. We will see if after looking at what they do, they decide to make some changes. I don't think it'll be so drastically different on Sunday, but maybe as they continue to move forward, we'll get to that. Okay, so they're bad with tight formations, but they're not copycat, although everyone thinks they're copycat. That'll be something they have to fight until things get better. I don't think anyone would be calling them copycat if they're actually good, but when you have those ties and the team you have ties to was bad at offense and you look kind of similar, it's going to be hard to avoid. And let's get to one more thing with Nick Caley before we go to break. I'm a process over results guy when it comes to sports, because I just think the process leads to good results if the process is good. I've questioned the Texans' process as far as building this offense, and the question was asked of Nick Caley about continuing down what they believe is the right way to do things and believing in it when you're not getting good results. Here's his answer to that question.
From a process standpoint, look, when we go out and we execute and we do the things that we're supposed to do out on the practice field or even in moments in the games this year, we've had success and done good things, and there has been efficient runs and there has been production. Okay, it just hasn't been to the level of, you know, being consistent enough. And I think, again, I believe in the process. I believe in what we're asking the guys to do, and we're going to evolve and change to do. We're not going to ever ask a guy to do something that we don't believe that they can do. I would never do that in any situation. So, the focus is on just playing cleaner football, being more consistent, and if we can do that, I'm confident that you'll see results. I really am.
That's a long way of saying it's not really the plays, it's the execution. That's what he said. That's what all he's saying. Hey, structurally, we don't have a problem. It is what the guys are doing once they're asked to do it that's the problem. That can fly 3 weeks in, although people don't even want to hear that. Let it get to week seven, and you still aren't executing. I mean, you will probably still hear it. Notably, when Jimbo Fisher was a coach of A&M, years into his tenure, he would say on ESPN 97.5, when asked about his offense, the plays are there. He talks really fast. He would talk about how it ain't the play calls, it's the execution. Sometimes he would dance around a little bit more instead of being so direct. Other times he would just say, these plays work. the guys running them aren't executing them, which still falls on the coach. When it comes down to it, if you can't instruct the players to execute them in the way they should be executed, then it's still your fault. But a coach, particularly early, will lean into, hey, I'm not wrong. He won't say the players are wrong. He'll just say, hey, we got to figure it out. Execution is always the big thing you lean into. Okay, I'll give it to week seven. If I still see what I'm seeing in week four or week three and into week four, you got to cut it out with it's all about execution, because you've proven you can't teach it the right way, at least in a way that the guys can understand. So Texans, Titans on Sunday. I can't imagine this game's going to be entertaining. Like, I think the Texans will win. I just don't think it'll be fun. I mean, the Titans are bad, but you're bad too. But you're a different level of bad. I think I talked about it. Like, the Titans are like the Texans are B.O. stinky. Like, the Titans are,
they're just bad.
We got a septic tank issue with the Titans. That's what we got with them. That's how bad they are. But, hey, 0-3 is 0-3, and they both have that record. And the Titans have played the Colts and the Ravens, so it's not like the Titans have played the Colts and the Rams. It's not like their schedule has been soft, and the Texans have played, if you combine record-wise, they played the Rams, who are 2-1, the Bucks, who are 2-1.
Bucks are undefeated.
Bucks are undefeated. Mm-hmm. They came back and beat the Jets. That's right. And also, you've got now I'm blanking on the team.
Jags.
The Jags, who are 2-1. That's the 2-1 team I'm thinking of. The Jags are a soft 2-1, partly because they played the Texans. Yeah. But the Jags are 2-1, too. So if you're talking about strength of schedule, the Texans have played a pretty tough one on record alone, and the same can be said for the Titans. We'll see.
What if they tie on Sunday?
It would just speak to how unentertaining the game is, and I think it can be pretty unentertaining. Look, the Titans and Texans have had certainly a long history, and it's generally, oh, look, Derrick Henry's running for 200 yards. And the Titans haven't been good the last couple of years, even in the final stretches of Derrick Henry's career with them. He would still go for 200-plus. They don't have that type of threat anymore. That's good, but somehow Will Levis won a game in Houston last year, so nothing can be counted on as far as Texans and Titans are concerned. I do think the Texans will win, but that's mostly because of what I believe them to be before the year started. Do I think they can go out there and just throw up a stinker offensively again and win with defense? That might be the way it has to get done, because I don't know if there are a lot of answers right now. The one problem, if we want to call off that, considering the Titans aren't a very good offensive team, the Texans looks like they're going to have to deal with the game without Derek Stingley. Derek Stingley did not practice yesterday, did not practice the day before. If he's limited today, that gives you some hope. But if he misses practice 3 days in a row, we might just want to count out Derek Stingley, and we'll probably hear that he's ruled out Sunday before the game. So be aware of that. You already got MJ Stewart playing. If you're down another starter, I mean, it is just Calvin Ridley, but maybe the Titans can make a couple plays if they can keep Cam Ward clean. So that's the status of the Texans currently. Missing some guys in the secondary and need to find some answers on offense against the Titans defense that has given up some points. All right, we'll go to break with that. We will get into some Rockets, mostly because we have some word about what their plan is regarding the loss of Fred VanVleet. If you want to join us, 713-780-3776, Rockets, Texans, Astros, whatever it is you want to get into, we welcome you. Also, we're going to be joined by Michael Carroll at 11:30. So if you're saving your call for Michael, you want to talk TV, that's on the table for you in hour two. Some college football to get to as well. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So, AJ, we played a game of what type of person are we yesterday. It was regarding the fan who got Cal Raleigh's 60th home run ball and then gave it to a kid, went viral, And we got a call from Julian who said FTK. My good friend KJ said the same thing, which just means, I mean, I'm going to clean it up a little bit. Forget that kid when it comes to the chance to make some money. Well, Kyle Raleigh got to meet the fan who gave up the ball. I'm sure the Mariners are going to give him some stuff. As I said before, that I knew that was going to happen. It ain't enough.
Yeah.
So we do have a result from that. He got to meet the great Kyle Raleigh. Wow, that kid gets the 60th home run ball. Nah, forget it. I don't care what you offer, Mariners. Now, of course, you got to take into account I'm not a Mariners fan. I don't care about Kyle Raleigh. But for whatever reason, if I was there, spending the week there, because I was excited to go see the Huskies versus Ohio State on Saturday. But, you know, I'm going to go to a Mariners game while I'm here just to see what it's like to be here. If I caught that ball, Mariner tickets, a Kyle Raleigh signed batter glove, beat it. But that's what the guy got. So, of course, that was to be expected. I wonder if he'll get tickets to future Mariners games. I'm sure that'll be part of the equation as well. But, yeah, if Kyle Raleigh doesn't hit another home run this year, what are we talking about? How much is that ball going to be worth? And the Hall of Fame's not getting it either. Unless they want to come out and give me a bag. I don't think the Hall of Fame pays for memorabilia, but that's the only way they're getting it from me. But that was a predictable end to that story. A couple pictures, a photo op. Hey, look how great this guy is. Great for humanity. I'm telling you right now, I'm not great for humanity. No chance.
And then when that kid's older, he could potentially end up selling it all. So
older. You mean like 4 days older when he sells it? When he sells it by Monday?
Right.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how much that ball is worth if Raleigh doesn't hit another home run between now and the end of the season. Well, he doesn't have to. The Mariners have won the division, so he probably will be getting some rest going forward. So maybe he won't have the opportunity, although they may want to give him a chance to break the record for home runs in the AL, which I think is 62 with Judge. All right, we got a couple callers we'll get to. We'll get to the Rocket stuff, but people want to talk about the other teams in town. So let's get to Jeff. He wants to talk about the Texans. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, Dale? Hope you're well. Hey, I got a question for you. I'm taking the Texans with the points, but for some reason I'm wrong again, and they're 0-4. Is CJ getting benched, which I'm going to say yes, and or is anyone going to lose their jobs?
I would tell you that CJ won't get benched because it would set off a chain of events that the Texans may not recover from. If you bench C.J. Stroud, even as, let's say, he is awful on Sunday. In fact, you could point to him directly as a reason they lost. Let's say that happens, because that has not been the case through 3 weeks. He hasn't been great. You could even say he hasn't been good. But you can't say they're losing these games because C.J. Stroud is playing so poorly, even with the two-turnover performance against the Jags. Let's say he has his worst game of his career. He's taken sacks where he shouldn't. He's turned the ball over. He throws three picks, whatever it is, whatever disaster scenario you can put in your head. You bench C.J. Stroud, considering all the other issues on this team offensively, you may never get him back as far as a guy who wants to be here. And it's not like you have a promising young player behind him. Like, even at 0-4 in this scenario, you would still believe you have a shot. Maybe not the division, because the Colts may very well be 4-0. They do have to play the Rams, so we'll see. But at 0-4, it's not happening. It's not happening. There's just a lot of factors at play. If he was Davis Mills, yes. But he is, now it's seasons ago now, we consistently have to reference back to that rookie year. He was the offensive rookie of the year. He was the bright, shining star of a team that was on the rise. Look, one of the biggest surprises in football, if not the biggest surprise in football in 2023, the Texans, who people were talking about picking in the top five the next year in 2024, and that's why trading a pick to get Will Anderson was such a big deal. That was all the talk after they made the trade. How could the Texans do that and trade up when their pick could be very valuable? Turned out it wasn't that valuable because of CJ. So, no, he's not getting benched. I couldn't foresee it happening. What? Not after week four. I mean, if it's like week nine and he's awful. By the way, once again, he has to be awful. He can't be someone who's just performing under expectations and the team is losing. You're setting yourself up for a real problem if if he is average and you got and you're benching him for what reason? There's no reason to. As long as he's not taking a lot of hits and he's relatively healthy, you keep playing him. But like you, I don't think it'll come to that. I think they're winning on Sunday. You're taking the points. I see that. Titans aren't good. But I could see a game where the offense gets booed. We're at that stage. If they come out and look as bad as they've looked throughout the first three weeks of the year, they could get booed.
You got booed last time against the Bucks.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, we're at the point. People are frustrated. They didn't expect to be 0-3. The team did. The fans didn't. So I could see boos happening. But as far as calling for Mills, imagine chance of Davis Mills. The fans are going to do it, and the team isn't going to take part in it. So I appreciate the call, Jeff. What you were setting up is a disaster scenario where the franchise is on tilt at that point, where you got questions everywhere. As far as who could pay, you just made the Kaley hire. He's not going anywhere. You just elevated Popovich. They're not going anywhere. Is there a wide receiver coach they can fire like the Falcons did? Because the young receivers aren't living up to expectations? It would be like that, like what happens in baseball where a pitching coach gets fired because you got to fire someone, or a bench coach gets fired, something like that, third base coach, whatever it is. It could be that, but even still, not after week four. I think the Texans aren't as reactionary as that from the top down. I mean, I don't even want to really talk about it, but it would have to be like week eight, week nine, and you got one win or something, but I don't see that happening. Let's get to Willie P. Let's talk Astros, and then we'll go to break, and then we'll do the Rocket stuff. What's up, Willie? Willie P or T? I think it's Willie P.
T.
Or it's Willie T. That's what I'm being told. What's up?
Oh, hey, how's it going? Good morning. Yeah, your intern hung up on me the first time. It was funny. He's like, yeah, let me put you on hold. I just heard a click. Now, real quick, you were talking about the guy who gave the ball back. You know, baseball fans would have hated me, because I would have been out there trying to get, you know, as much as I could. I would have been out there like Kawhi Leonard's Uncle Dennis or whatever his name is. I'm going to ask him for the moon. What'd you say?
I said a part of the team for the 60th home run ball.
Yeah, man. Look, give me a little bit of steak or something. Give me some kind of title. You got to make something shake, baby. But real quick, with the Astros, it sucks that they lost. I hate that they lost. I mean, granted, they won last night, but I hate that, you know, the first two games of the series went the way they went. And, like, I know what you're saying, like, oh, if I could – what I meant the other day was, like, hopefully them missing the playoffs, Jim Crane wakes up, like, all right, something's got to change. Like, you know, I'm sure he was getting ready to make plans for October, and now his assistant was like, you're free, dude. You can do whatever you want. So, you know, hopefully he changes that. But one other thing, shout out to Houston Dynamo. They're only one game out of the playoff spot. I mentioned that there's three games left in the season. They're fighting Dallas for that last wild card position, so – you know, we're on playoff watch if you guys want to come over to this side. And shout out Carly Ursay Gordon. You guys have a wonderful afternoon. AJ DePruce, what it do, baby? Thanks, fellas.
Carly Ursay Gordon. She is the CEO. The you would say, while the three sisters are all involved, she is the head of the Colts right now. And she was at practice yesterday. She does that. She'll have a headset during the games. She's very into it. Did Willie P just reveal something about himself? I don't feel like that was as strictly football related. Yeah, hey, you don't have to announce you're a milkman. It's fine. It's fine. I mean, it's no problem. I don't have a problem with it. You just coming on Houston Airways and saying the thing well, you're not very clear. I have to kind of explain it. But Carly Ursay Gordon, CEO of the Colts. Willie P. Is that not the whole Dynamo thing, because you don't want to talk about Manu and how bad they are, so he's decided to focus on the local team? Yeah, the Dynamo still in the playoff picture. We'll see if they can get in. Well, we have another team in town doing that type of deal. The Texans are in that same area where they need a little help, but they also got to play well down the stretch. So we'll see if the Dynamo and the Texans can get in. I mean, I'm looking at Carly Ursay Gordon. I don't know if you come on and shout her out, though. She is the head. She is the head of the team that's leading the division while the Texans are 0-3. But she's going to be a prominent face for the Colts. She's going to make sure she's on the sideline and at practice going forward. And at least so far, it's working out for them, thanks to Daniel Jones and also Jonathan Taylor, who's kind of getting overlooked. He's been really good this year. All right, we'll go to break with that. You want to shout out Amy Adams Strunk? I guess you can do that too. 713-780-3776. We'll do the Rocket stuff when we come back. Tim Legler talked about what the plan should be for the Rockets. Zach Lowe told us what they're going to do as far as personnel at their point guard spot. So we'll have some sound from a couple of ESPN guys on the Rockets and how they will plan around the absence of Fred VanVleet. We'll do that when we get back.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
I think I said that the Texans and the Dynamo are in the same spot. I meant the Astros. The Dynamo have three games to go in their season to see if they can qualify. Like, 9 teams per conference make it in the MLS playoffs. 18 teams overall make the playoffs. I get it. You need an inventory. But if I'm looking at it, like, the league has expanded quite a bit. If you had stopped paying attention a while ago, maybe since the Dynamo have had a bit of a downturn since clearly their initial start here when they were really, really good. But 18 teams, and right now as it stands, the Dynamo are 10th, a point out of the last playoff spot. Dallas has a game at hand. So if Dallas wins out, they'll make it. The Dynamo need a little help, and they certainly have to do well in their final three games. All right, let's get to the Rockets before we wrap up hour one. So the big news earlier this week, Fred VanVleet out for the season. And there was an article that came out that we were going to get to yesterday. It was talking about a couple guys that the Rockets could look at to see if that could bolster their lineup, maybe get a frontline point guard like Derek White was mentioned. That was a guy that there were some conversations about, not from the Rockets' perspective, but just people, NBA people, talking about who could be on the move because the Celtics were cutting salary, and was Derek White someone they would be willing to move? And it was kind of put out there that it would cost quite a bit to get Derek White. Of course, you know, the Rockets made the big move for Kevin Durant, and they added others like Finney Smith and Clint Capella. So Derek White was at the top of that list, and you threw in like Kobe White, who's another guy people thought about as far as a guy on the move, and I'm sure the Bulls would take a couple assets to make that move. Well, Zach Lowe did some digging regarding a potential Rockets trade, and this is what he had to say.
From what I've heard, the Rockets are going to do nothing, and they're going to do nothing for a couple of reasons. Number one, they can't really do anything until December 15th when all the free agents that signed in the summer can be traded, including like half of their roster. And they're not going to do anything because they're going to give the ball to Amen Thompson and Reed Sheppard. They might even start Reed Sheppard, I don't know, and just see what they have in those guys.
So they're going to stand pat. They're going to lean into their recent draft picks and let those guys be ball handlers. So no Kobe White, no Derek White. It'll be some combo of Reed Sheppard and Amen Thompson. Well, Tim Legler had that thought in mind as well. So he put some thought into what we could see from one of those guys at that position, because depending on what type of offense you run and the personnel you have, some point guards are initiators. Some point guards are spacers, where all they really are responsible for is spacing the floor. If they're good defensively, point of attack defense, and allow the others on your roster to create and knock down open shots. They have Kevin Durant. They have Alperen Şengün. Those guys can be hubs of an offense. They can be distributors. Certainly they can be scorers as well. So maybe whoever does become the point guard is just more a guy who has that designation but isn't doing traditional point guard stuff. So here's Tim Legler on what you might see from the Rockets with the absence of Fred VanVleet.
I look at a team like Boston, you know, and Drew Holiday and Derek White, like neither one of those guys is really a traditional lead guard. They're just good players. Most of their offense initiation, even whether it's ISO or ball screen, came from Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. They're forwards. And then the two guards could handle the ball, both excellent defenders, which made them more valuable for them. But then they were Drew was more of a weak side cutter type post up guard. And Derek White became really an excellent spot up shooter or a shooter shooting a three off ball screen. But the offense was run through the other two guys, Tatum and Brown. So maybe Houston, with Şengün's ability to initiate, with Kevin Durant's ability to initiate, we talked about Amen Thompson and like his ability to initiate in a different way than those guys. Maybe that's enough. And you rely more on this guard spot now as a guy that can spot up, space the floor, and knock down shots at a high rate, in which case Reed Shepard and Holiday can both maybe be answers for that. And you run your offense a little bit differently with the other guys being the primary ball handlers and decision makers than, you know, a guy like VanVleet who would have had the ball a lot.
Yeah, we saw Amen Thompson in stretches where they would just spread the floor, let him attack one-on-one and try to get to the cup. You know, he won a game against Boston, who he was just talking about that way. He also was a guy in the Warriors series where they thought he had an advantage. Get out of the way. Let Amen Thompson go create for himself. So that could be something they lean into, certainly. And, of course, Aaron Holiday, in limited opportunities as far as shots, he was good from three in his 2 years with the Rockets in that 38 to 39% range. Reed Shepard's reputation is one where he should be a guy who could knock down open shots. So if you go, he mentioned more recent examples, but the one that keeps popping into my head, considering all the initiators the Heatles had, maybe you're looking at more of a Mario Chalmers type as a guy who you want on the floor to play defense, but also just knock down open shots. You want to bring the ball up a couple times? Sure, we'll give you that. But really, your reason for being out there is to eat on open looks. And certainly, Reed Shepard, you think, would fill into that role pretty well. Now, can he hold up defensively? He has the instincts, quick hands and all that stuff. But size, his lack thereof, probably will be an issue. But that's what you have. You can throw Amen Thompson on a backcourt guy who's going off if you need to, maybe hide Reed Shepard on someone. So there are always ways to get around it. And certainly Jabari Smith can be a guy who can defend pretty much every position. So you got guys if Reed Shepard becomes a liability. And of course you have the Aaron Holiday factor of it as well. Because of Reed Shepard's draft status, it's always he goes to the forefront and Aaron Holiday is someone everyone's like, okay, whatever, Aaron Holiday. Ime proved last year that he'll play Aaron Holiday. So I don't believe it'll just be handed to Reed Shepard. The question will be if it's swayed in his favor 70-30, where he has to be really awful for Aaron Holiday to get that job, or will they enter training camp if the Rockets decide the fifth starter will be one of those guys? Will they enter training camp on an even playing field? And the best guy wins for Rocket fans, and I imagine the organization. If they do set it up that way, they want Reed Shepard to win it. But will they even set it up that way?
Because Udoka's going to make him earn it for sure.
That's what I think.
Yeah,
it would have to come from on high.
Yeah,
like the guys who are in the scouting department and Rafael Stone who drafted him says, give him first opportunity.
Right.
I think it's going to be, hey, if we come out of training camp and Aaron Holiday is your starting point guard, if they decide to go with what you might consider a traditional guard for that fifth spot, if they don't just go really big and throw a Dorian Finney-Smith or Tari Eason in that role, I would not be surprised if Aaron Holiday wins that job.
Yeah.
Just because of how Ime decides how he wants to run his team. I don't think he's giving that job to Reed Shepard if Aaron Holiday is better. But we're not that far away from training camp, and when we get back on Monday, that'll be media day. So I'm sure we'll hear some answers to those questions that the reporters will ask of the Rockets about what their plan is. All right, we'll go to break with that. We'll get into the second hour of the show when we come back. We'll do some college football. It's a big weekend. And, of course, Michael Carroll joins us at 11:30. He is the host of Comicast. He'll tell you about what you should or shouldn't watch this weekend. We'll see what he has in store. I didn't see that he went to a screening this week, so maybe it'll be for everyone to stay home and watch things. Or maybe there's a good movie that he'll recommend as well to go to theaters for, if you can pull yourself away from all the sports this weekend. So we'll do that at 11:30. We'll get to more before that. We'll be back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.